Kanye West and Ty Dolla $ign's highly anticipated collaboration album Vultures has officially been released, and people have had time to experience the album. They've been talking about it a lot online and talking about just their favorite moments, their least favorite moments, how the album stacks up in Kanye's catalog, and much more. And we've done a lot of content on our YouTube channel about it, but we felt like it could have been cool to dedicate an audio podcast episode to actually going through things that you guys could have missed from this album, including certain sample flips, including songs that were left off of the album, including possible album theories, and much more. So that's exactly what we're going to do in this episode. It won't be our traditional music recommendations episode, but we thought for this album, this would be something cool to do. And for anyone that's new here, do not forget that we are dropping new audio podcasts exclusively on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere that you can get your podcasts every Tuesday. So make sure to hit that follow button on whatever platform you're on. And we appreciate it if you guys can write us a review and give us a 5-star rating. It helps us on the charts of the podcast charts for music. So let's jump into this episode. And so going into this, like, did you expect to find a lot of, let's say, Easter eggs? Because it isn't the most complex album ever.
No,
right?
It's not a complex album to analyze. And I think that was kind of the approach with the project, right? Was to make it a bit more lighthearted, to have fun with it. It's a lot different than Donda, Jesus is King, and Ye, because those are full-fledged concept albums that, you know, you could go through the writing, you could go through the different portions of the album and find different things. But for the most part, I really did enjoy the album for that. And I think that when you go through the listening experience, yes, while it's simplistic, there's a lot to dive into, especially when you look at, let's say, the lore around the album, right? So this being the first installment, and this kind of being the first release date out of three, what's to come with the next installment, the next one? Is this album going to be worked on as the next ones are released? Like, there's so many different questions and loose ends that still have to be tied, and I really enjoy that about the album because it adds an entertainment factor when analyzing it. So let's go through the samples. I think that's a really good place to start.
I just want to say, before we jump into that, what is your take on that in terms of this album possibly getting changes? Because we already saw there was a change to the album cover. We saw that it's been taken off of Apple Music and brought back on. Like, there's already low-key
been added to Spotify.
Some changes. So
I'm okay with it. Yeah, but I expected this. And I was saying this in our previous content when analyzing the album and when going through the rollout, that this is an integral part of every single Kanye West album. You go back even to The Life of Pablo. This was being done before. So I'm not necessarily frustrated with it. And I kind of enjoy it, right? Because it's kind of a work in progress as time continues to move on. And if other artists could do this, where they're constantly trying to improve a project they already released, then why not do it? You know, at the end of the day, you look at, let's say,
Life of Pablo, it started off
well, not only that, but different industries, right? Take like software and technology. There's updates on, let's say, their software that they're releasing, and there's little fix and bug glitches that you could go on and, you know, you can nitpick with and kind of remove or add as you continue to see your product evolve. And I feel like for music, yeah, once you release it, it's the world's product. But if you notice that there's certain blemishes or certain things that you want to correct with it, why not do it? Have fun with it. And it's constantly, you know, music is constantly evolving. So why not work on it?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting concept. I'm kind of on the fence about it. I think that it could be cool, but at a certain point, you have to sort of give a final product, which Kanye does always seem to get to. But yeah, let's go through some of these really interesting samples that maybe not everyone was familiar with. So one of the more obvious ones was the Dogma sample on Back to Me, but maybe you guys don't actually know the backstory behind this sample. So this was actually sampling multiple quotes that are part of a movie scene from the 1999 movie Dogma. And after actually hearing the sample in the album, I decided, fuck it, I watched this movie when I was a kid, let me go back and watch it again.
Was it funny as fuck?
It's a pretty funny movie, bro. It's a Kevin Smith movie, and of course he's in the scene with Jay. It's a really funny movie. I don't know if you ever saw that meme of of Jesus giving you the wink and going like that. That was from that movie.
That was from Dogma? Oh, yeah, that's fire. I never knew that.
So it's a really funny movie, and it was interesting to see Kanye West do this because he's done this before with comedy movies. If you look at Fellas in Paris from 2011, coincidentally, another collaboration album, he had sampled Blades of Glory on that song. But it was cool this time around. How did you feel about him literally dedicating an entire verse to that sample.
Well, I know how you feel about it because the review's out right now, but I really enjoyed it. I feel like it was lighthearted. It was fun. It was catchy. You found him experimenting with a new flow and him kind of changing his melodies on just a switch of a dime, which I really like from Kanye. So I enjoyed it. And I would like to see this from more rappers, you know, bring in, like, let's say, pop culture references into their sampling choices. I feel like it does add for a fun experience. And I feel like when it's done properly, like it was done on Back to Me in this case, it did make for an interesting listen. But let's go on to the Mo Bamba sample on Carnival. This was super random because no one really expected this, but if you actually go into the song itself, it says that it samples it. So did you find this off of first listen, or did you have to do some digging with it?
I was digging and digging. I'm like, where the fuck is this sample? I bumped Carnival like a million times. I'm like, I cannot pick up on it. But clearly after doing multiple listens, I realized that it can definitely not be an interpolation, because sometimes something will be listed as a sample, but it'll be because an artist used lines from that song or whatever it could be. But from what I was picking up on, it's definitely an element within the production, and it's probably a minimal element within
Maybe like a drum pattern or a certain type of drum that was used, because Mo Bamba is very grandiose and like it has like that slamming effect to it. So it's probably
that's why, production-wise, they have similarities, but I couldn't actually pick out which element it was. But it was just cool as a fact to know that Sheck Wes' Mo Bamba was sampled on Carnival. But let's go on to the Ozzy Osbourne samples, because these were very interesting. Kanye samples Ozzy on the songs King and Carnival. And what's interesting is that there was kind of a beef between Kanye and Ozzy.
Well, even Ozzy's wife came out and, you know, had some stuff to say about that. So,
absolutely.
It's interesting to see if they're going to strip those samples at a certain point.
It will be interesting. But Kanye kind of found a loophole on Carnival, which I found was absolutely genius, because instead of sampling Iron Man directly from Black Sabbath, he sampled his own song Hell of a Life, which I believe already got sample clearance for War Pigs. So by sampling his own song that sampled the Ozzy Osbourne War Pigs, I think he's in the clear.
That's true, right?
Because he's sampling his own music, which already got cleared. So I don't know exactly how that works.
But it depends if he's sampling his own song or not. You know,
which he is.
If it's the exact right, like, yeah. So that's what's interesting. It's always kind of a fine line with samples and everything.
It was an interesting tactic, though, for Kanye to use.
But I like the additions, too, because Ozzy Osbourne's music has always been very brash. It's always been very rebellious, and it has a sort of, like, dark feeling to it. You know, when these tracks, example, like King and Carnival, I feel like it was nice additions for it. And, you know, they really added something to the track list itself. But all right, I think that's going to conclude the samples off of the album. Let's move into the next portion of this episode. And these were the Vultures era songs that are still in limbo. So the songs that we're about to read out have either been teased by different producers, artists, you know, let's say people in the camp, via IG, via Twitter, you know, the listening parties, whatever the case may be.
Most of these were actually played at the listening parties, and people were disappointed that they didn't make the album.
But we still have two more installments. So let's go through them. And Lou, I want to know your take on which ones are actually going to make it or not. So I could go through the entire list. You have Everybody featuring Charlie Wilson. That's arguably the most popular song from this entire album rollout. Everyone's dying for that song, so we'll see if that's going to make it on 2 or 3. We have River featuring Young Thug. This was highly anticipated. People are calling this maybe the best song out of the entire run that Ty Dolla $ign and Kanye have been on. Then we have New Body featuring Nicki. There was the whole thing that happened on Twitter where apparently Kanye was trying to get Nicki's verse cleared for the song, so we'll see if that ends up coming through. Then you have Time Moving Slow, you have Slide, you have Promotion featuring Future, you have Lifestyle featuring Lil Wayne, you have Forever Rolling featuring Lil Baby, IG Models featuring Future and Lil Durk, Gun to My Head featuring Kid Cudi, Worship featuring Northwest and Fauzia, Drunk featuring Kodak Black and Bad Bunny, and there's a strong chance that we'll see a lot of these songs on the future installments. So, out of everything that I've just read to you, what's one song that you really want to see make the next one?
Man, it's so crazy because of the amount of songs that are sort of, you know,
in
floating
limbo
around right now, it's almost unlikely that all of these make them, especially looking at Everybody. I mean, that's one that grabbed my fucking ears right away, because the original Backstreet Boys song was a classic in my childhood, one of my favorite songs ever when I was a kid, and I still fuck with it to this day. So I was really ecstatic to hear Charlie Wilson's vocals on it, to see it be this big grandiose intro as it was supposed to be according to the track list. But I think that they're not going to get the clearance for it, bro, sadly.
You think so?
I really don't think they're going to get the clearance. So I don't see this one really making the album, because they were working super hard to get it cleared weeks before the album ever came out, and it didn't end up making it. So I feel like that might be a lost track, sadly. I actually listened to quite a few snippets of these because I'm like, you know what? I might never actually get these songs in the future installments, or at least maybe half of them. So I'm like, fuck it. Let me hear like 30 seconds of each, except for River. Because I heard so much hype about River featuring Young Thug, I'm like, I got to save at least this
one. You
got to
stay away from it. So my tactic with this is is going to be kind of my strategy with it. I'm going to wait for the other two installments to drop, and then I'm going to go through everything that didn't make it. Just because I had such a good time, you know, while listening to the album for the first time for the first installment, because I didn't necessarily know what to expect. And that's something that I want to feel again with the next two installments.
Absolutely. But yeah, without spoiling anything, you know, you have really killer performances. That's all I want to say is that looking at, let's say, Forever Rolling with Lil Baby, a lot of people were sort of like, oh, Lil Baby in 2024, he's not at his best. He really delivered and sounded hungry on the verse. You look at something like Time Moving Slow. If you like futuristic Kanye, you can get those vibes there. One of the most shocking ones, which I only heard maybe 10 seconds of this one, Drunk featuring Kodak Black and Bad Bunny. How the fuck do you think that's going to sound?
Probably going to be like a summer banger sort of attempt. Kind of what Travis did with K-pop, maybe. That sort of energy. But we'll see what happens with it.
We'll see what happens. But yeah, guys, a lot of songs floating around. We'll see what ends up making it and what doesn't end up making it. But it's definitely going to be an interesting time to follow just the rollouts for these next two albums. Because like we saw with Vultures 1, there was a scheduled date and it didn't necessarily exactly follow through with it. It came out a day later. So
yeah.
We'll see what ends up happening with those. But let's talk about some artists that almost made the album, which also plays into, of course, all the songs we just mentioned, because those were all artists that were featured on songs that seemed to be almost finished, but they didn't make it. But you could also add in Fabio Foreign, who was apparently supposed to be on the song Hood Rat. And we know this because he was the first artist to preview this song. And apparently he made a reference track for it. And the evidence is there because when you look at the writing credits for Hood Rat,
you'll see Fabio there.
He's listed under
there. Yeah, there was also Offset that was supposed to make the album. He was doing some teasing on his socials. And he had also appeared at one of the listening parties, one of the very first ones. So that's interesting. And then, of course, Metro Boomin. Metro Boomin tweeted that he was out in Italy and he tweeted about Vultures. And we didn't see any credits from him on the first installment.
How do you feel about that? Because even when you look at listening parties, there was no Metro Boomin tags. There was no real indications that he was
on there.
Maybe
they're going to save it for a surprise. Listen, man, we got two more installments. Yeah. We have two more installments. So we'll see what happens with the other two. But I hope he makes it on the other future ones, because we know what Kanye and Metro Boomin could do together. It could be absolutely destructive. But let's go through some different collaborators and contributions that were kind of a surprise to you and I. Because when we're talking about a Kanye West album, I feel like you kind of know what to expect. But at this point in time, for the first installment, there was some really cool ones. So JPEG Mafia apparently had four production credits on Vultures, including Fuck Some, King, Beg Forgiveness, and Stars. Let me ask you this, though. He only had production credits, so would you have seen him maybe get on any of these songs?
Oh, man, that's an interesting question. I feel like when it comes to JPEG Mafia and Kanye, as soon as I heard that they were working together, I'm like, I don't know where this is going to work, but maybe on a song, for example, like Carnival, where you have all of this manic energy, you have everyone giving you these high voltage performances. Maybe JPEG could have slid in there, but at the same time, I feel like Kanye sort of wanted that song to be a major hit. And by getting someone who might be quirkier like JPEG Mafia on the song, it might have sort of slowed it down a little bit. You know
or
what
maybe
I mean?
He just went to those sessions to the produce and that's it, right?
But
so that's another thing.
I kind of think we expected vocals. Would you have seen any songs where he could have fit personally?
Maybe on Carnival, Loki. Something more brash, something more manic, something more grandiose. You know, but again, he's such a quirky artist. So, but he's so talented. He could fit on anything he really fucking wants.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've seen him go into so many
he's
different
He's a versatile
bands.
Artist. We could probably fit in a lot of different places.
And
that's
very true. And especially with his own production itself, he's so used to it. So I feel like he could have gone anywhere. Then after that, we had Keitra Nada that worked on the drums for Fuck Some. That was really cool because Keitra's, you know, a hometown hero for us and one of our favorite producers. So I didn't even like expect it, to be honest with you, but Fuck Some, the drums are fire.
The drums are fire, but that's what I was really like surprised about, is that usually when you hear a Keitra Nada beat, you don't even have to look at the credits. Like you kind of know,
you know right
his distinct style and just how amazing the productions are. With Fuck Some, and it was well produced, but you couldn't pick up on his work on it. It didn't have like the signature Keitra sauce, but
I agree with
still
you.
Cool to see. Quentin Miller is credited as a writer on Stars, Talking, Fuck Summon, and Beg Forgiveness. And this was interesting just because he's been able to have a career after all the controversy. He had worked on King's Disease 3 and a bunch of other albums. So it's cool to see him still being able to shrive.
He worked on King's Disease 3?
Yeah. he had a credit on KD3 or KD2. I'm not sure which one.
Wow, that's crazy.
And I think Hit-Boy had addressed it and said that I think maybe he had done a word or two for a hook. Like, he made it seem like it was minimal.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting fact. But all right.
How do you feel? Okay, wait. How do you feel about that, though? I never really asked you that. You've given Drake a lot of slander for that, and now he shows up on a Nas album.
Yeah, and I think that it's like, it's one of those instances where Quentin Miller is being directly credited. So it's not sort of like, oh, well, who really wrote it? It's very clear. And from what Hit-Boy said, it was probably just for a hook. And I don't have an issue with it, because you look at Nas's entire catalog, there's maybe one, two, or three songs where there's other writers credited that probably had an
impact.
You're
a big stickler with that. You've told me many times.
I was a big stickler.
Yeah, how you feel like it's it loses all integrity, and how, like, you don't, like, you kind of lower
it. When you're keeping it a secret, I think it's a very different scenario.
No, but like what you clearly said in our past arguments, that you feel like if a rapper uses a writer, that it feels extremely inauthentic, and that it kind of knocks down points.
It could feel inauthentic, absolutely, depending
on... So what's the difference between, let's say, a Drake and a Nas using writers?
As I just finished telling you, Drake had done it for the entirety of a whole album where it was full of reference tracks that appeared, and they were copied and pasted. For this situation, Nas went a whole career without any ghostwriter allegations, and the one time you got it, it was likely for a hook, as said by Hit-Boy. But let's move on. Let's talk about Denzel Curry, who was credited as a writer on Paid. And this is a fucking W for Denzel, just because he was tweeting a lot about Vultures, and we're like, oh, fuck, is he going to be featured? Is he going to have any role in this album whatsoever? And what do you know? He ends up being credited for Paid, which, that kind of surprised me. Did it surprise you to know that he was credited on Paid and not one of the more lyrical tracks on the album?
No. I've seen Joey Badass write Rockstar.
Yeah.
So it doesn't necessarily surprise me.
Very true.
Talented writers like that, they could go anywhere they want. And their own music is kind of separate from that. So that's what I enjoy.
I'll ask you the same thing about JPEG. Would you have liked to have seen Denzel on any of the songs on the album?
Any of the songs on the album? That's a great fucking question. You could have done well on Burn, low-key. Give me a melt my eyes sort of performance for the last verse.
That could have worked.
Something really cool like that.
That could have worked.
All right, let's continue on.
Another interesting collaborator, Mike Dean.
Yeah, Mike Dean
produced Back to Me. I think he had said something where he's like, oh, we're not going to work together ever again or something.
And he probably made this beat before it happened.
That's true. That's possible.
That could be a
but I think he also appeared at the listening party. So fingers crossed that more Kanye and Mike Dean music
How
is in the works.
How could you have Kanye without Mike Dean, you know?
I know, man. It's tough.
Yeah, it's tough. It's but okay, you want to continue, Lou?
Absolutely. So next up, we wanted to go through just some interesting facts about what this album was first to do in terms of Kanye's catalog. Mm-hmm. First interesting fact, it's the first album to actually showcase Kanye in the artwork. I don't know if anyone noticed this, but if you look at his entire catalog, I mean, yes, you have the bear and you have different sort of versions of Kanye or symbols that represent Kanye, but you never had Kanye himself appearing.
Well, the Kanye bear is him in it.
Yes, but it's not. You don't see Kanye himself.
But you don't.
You don't have the figure of Kanye West.
Yeah, you do. He's in a costume. Same thing with this. He's in the Jason Voorhees costume.
No, it's very different.
I don't know. I'm a bit shady about this fact, but
very
I get what you're
different.
Saying. Oh, I don't know.
Absolutely, bro. Because he's bear.
Wearing the bear
this
costume.
Is Kanye
with the Jason Voorhees.
But
mask.
Within his own form and figure, it's his own form and figure. Whereas the bear, it changes the figure. It's not Kanye himself. But I see where you're coming from, but I disagree.
All right, the next one. This is the first time Kanye puts a number to an album with Vultures. One, confirming that he'll be dropping his first ever sequel through this series. That's interesting as well. We thought that was going to happen for the Donda series. So are you a fan of this approach? Are you liking how he's rolling this out?
It's funny because before this whole Vultures era began, we always spoke about how we love Kanye West so much because he'll never remake the same album. He'll never do a sequel. And what do you know? He ends up making sequels. And listen, I'm okay with the approach. I mean, I think we're at a point where it's we're not going to get classics from Kanye. We're not going to get projects that stack up to his best work. So if he's having fun and feeding the fans, fuck it, I'll be here. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But yeah, another really interesting fact that is crazy to think about. Vultures is the first independent album ever to go number one in over 100 countries.
This is what's cool about the album.
Okay,
so this is completely separate from the music. The business model around this album is fucking sick. It's really sick because obviously Kanye's out of his deal and he doesn't have to wait on anyone. And that's what I like about this is that it's really him and it's his team hands on. And obviously there's probably certain blemishes along the way with the marketing teams, but this is for sure going to be the first number one album in let's say, I say hip hop history. to go number one on the Hot 200, probably.
You're saying as an independent album? That I'm not sure about. I just know it's number one, and it's the first one to go number one in over 100
because
countries.
Because I think Yes Jules had tweeted about that, that it's probably going to be one of the first number one albums to independently do
Could
everything.
Could be, yeah, most likely.
And not only that, but he just paid like close to $7 million for an ad space on the Super Bowl campaign, and he did it off his iPhone. I fucking love
that. He probably did it like the day of, bro. It's probably just in the moment.
Yeah, he was probably
like,
on his way. They were like, yeah, we got the slot for the Super Bowl. Do you want to rip it? And he said, yes, okay, let's do it. And I like that too, because it's not like the stage commercial. He's literally on his phone. He's like, listen, guys, I got the ad space. Go visit Yeezy.com. Buy my shoes. And then, boom, he's out of there. Yep. Like, how fucking cool
so
is that?
So dope.
The marketing of the album has been super fun to go through.
I don't know. I don't know about the rollout. Like, the rollout is so disorganized and so messy.
It's been like that since Donda, though. It's like that with every Kanye album. But, like, the fact that he's...
It doesn't get any better, though, to experience in the sense of, like, even the listening parties dragged on. Right? No, it was, like, fucking five listening parties. It's like, okay, we get it.
It's still, like, we still said how the Donda parties were so fun and it was an extraordinary rollout. It's the exact same thing.
Those were different. It was the first time he had ever done it. It was innovative as an album experience, and every listening party mattered so much because you really thought with every single one there was going to be the album drop, and you got to see the album evolve over time. With this one, it was cool, but I don't know. Even the fact that you have to pay for the streams, I don't know. I respect it, but it was just a different experience altogether. And by the way, also a little fact, Kanye, this album from Kanye was the first ever Kanye album to write out every song title in all caps. I feel like that's something that we're seeing more in the streaming era, where people as of late are going with that style. But let's talk about, again, the business model with this album. When you scroll to the bottom of a page on Spotify, Apple Music, you'll see the name of the label that owns the rights to the music. And for most of Kanye's catalog, of course, you'll see UMG Recordings. It's the first time that we see Yeezy written. Mm-hmm. So this could either just be the fact that, you know, it's an independent album and he's just putting his own name and thought it'd be cool to put YZY. But it could also maybe be him teasing, possibly him starting a new record label. Of course, he seems to be done with Good Music, which was an imprint of Def Jam. He seems to sort of not be doing anything there. A lot of artists from Good Music, he's not in the best space with. So would you like to see a new label from Kanye late in his career?
I think it's going to be more of a creative camp around Kanye and like the Yeezy brand itself, where he's probably going to be releasing music or different types of media formats, different types of fashion pieces just through Yeezy itself. And I think it's just more of like an independent business statement, more than he's going to sign artists, he's going to go into that. Or maybe he does. You don't know. But like, if you even look at a lot of his collaborators, either they're already signed to major imprints or, you know, they're just out of the realms of his possibility for signing. I don't think he's signing fucking Travis Scott anytime soon.
Yeah, absolutely not.
With Epic Records. So that's it. Like, I think it was just more of a statement of, this is a Yeezy product. It's independent. There's no UMG backing this. There's no Def Jam. There's none of that anymore. This is really just Kanye West and the Yeezy camp.
Yeah, but I agree about that.
Let's keep going on with this, all right? So let's go into the original album title, because the Vulture series was kind of always circulating online, and people were kind of confused because there was another title that surfaced, let's say, a bit earlier, and it was Bad Bitch Playbook. So how do you feel about the switch to Vultures? Do you like the branding itself? And how do you feel about the lore of the album?
Well, I kind of like the album title Vulture, just because the way that I interpreted it was always like, there's a lot of people around Kanye West that want to profit off of him, that are maybe vultures to him and his creativity. So I like the approach with Vultures. Bad Bitch Playbook sounds badass, but it's like, at the end of the day, when you hear the music, it's like, this album title maybe would have fit better for like a Nicki Minaj or like, I don't know, someone.
But
that,
I guess they kind of wanted maybe to go with that one just because there's a bit more of a lighthearted feel to the album.
But Bad Bitch Playbook?
Yeah, and it's a lot of content matter about women and partying and that sort
but
of stuff.
But it doesn't sound like it could be a playbook for women to like get advice on or like anything like
that.
Yeah, I guess. You know
what
I mean?
It's not like a new workout plan sort of.
That's why. So
like, he did that early on in his career. So I'm happy with the Vultures.
You prefer the Vultures title over that one?
Absolutely.
What's cool, another fun fact is the fact that the inception of this album as a whole came to be when Kanye was working on his solo album, which we now know is titled Y3, in Japan, decided to call over Ty Dolla $ign to get some assistance for his solo album. Mm-hmm. They end up making the song Burn, which was the first song they made for the Vultures album. And then based on their chemistry and the way that they enjoyed working together on Burn, that's what actually led to them making the entire collaboration album.
That's really cool.
Which is pretty cool. So yeah, just another fun fact there. But now let's go into an album concept theory.
This has been circulating online, yeah.
This was interesting to me because I'm like, I'm not expecting to see this float around because it's such a playlist-styled album. There's not that much cohesion.
And by the way,
even looking at like this proposed theory.
It doesn't necessarily.
It has so many holes.
Absolutely.
It has so many holes.
So this is what fans are thinking are the theory, okay? So apparently this album is split into three acts. Act 1, tracks 1 to 5, is Ye dealing with his divorce. Act 2, from tracks 6 to 12, is Ye being single and having fun. And Act 3, from tracks 13 to 16, is the aftermath of Ye's love affairs and finding Bianca. So, I don't know. It's just because, like, you have a talking in the middle of, like, the 1 to 5, and what the fuck does that have to do with the divorce?
Well,
you know?
That's number 6, I believe, talking.
Talking's number 4.
You're right, it is number 4, eh?
Talking's 4.
Yeah, so that's why I think there's holes in it, is that, yes, like, is there Kanye dealing with his divorce? Yes, you'll find that in a song like He's to My Life. Is Ye single and having fun between 6 and 12? Yes, you could find that on songs like Hood Rat, etc. Act 3, 13 to 16, the aftermath of Ye's relationship, sure. You get that on Beg Forgiveness and a few others, but it's not like all of those subsections of the album are really designated towards acts that really follow those themes through and through.
Yeah, the sequencing of the album has nothing to do with it. Okay, so going into, let's say, 1 to 5, right? Stars, Keys to My Life, Paid, Talking, and Back to Me. Talking and Paid, like, those have nothing to do with, let's say, Kanye West and Kim Kardashian's divorce. Maybe you could say because Northwest is in one of the songs that, you know, but no, I don't think the intention
I
is
mean,
that, you know?
Yeah, no, not really.
And then after not that, really. Back to Me, like, they're doing a whole interpolation of, like,
That one's about the divorce, though. Like, coming back to me, like you realizing that, like, guys like me don't just fall out of the sky. That was about
it. I get
it,
but like it's so loose though. Like it doesn't.
It is. Like there's some points where you're like, okay, I could see this, but it is a bit far fetched.
It is far fetched. And the sequencing of the album is kind of put into a playlist vibe, like you were saying. So I don't think there's that much of an album concept theory. But guys, if you heard anything or you'd like for us to explore certain things, drop it in the comments of this audio podcast. But okay. Let's go on to the next one. The background of the Jason Voorhees mask.
So, this was really interesting.
This was really fun because every single album rollout for Kanye, he brings in like a new aesthetic. He brings in new clothing. You go back all the way to, let's say, you know, the College Dropout. It was like the big bear mascot, right? You go, let's say, into the Yeezus era. It was like the studded mask that he would wear at all of his concerts. You look at, let's say, Donda was the black mask with the red jacket. For this, it was the Jason Voorhees outfit. So how do you like it, man? And how do you like the aesthetic?
I think it's cool. I think that, you know, like, again, Kanye was playing into like him being in his villain arc where he's public enemy number one and he wants to sort of play into that. So I thought it was cool to have the hockey mask sort of being shown at the listening parties, to be shown at a Travis Scott concert that he guest appeared at. I think that he really committed himself to the aesthetic because he even initially had it in the album cover for Vultures 1, and then he ends up removing it. But what's interesting is that he only ends up removing it coincidentally the same day that we got a TMZ interview
from Kane Hodder.
From Kane Hodder, who actually played Jason Voorhees in the Friday the 13th franchise. So, Kane Hodder had said, I think it's cool that he's doing this, but his mask is cheap. It's a bit corny. I can get him a real one because I have real, you know, used masks from the actual Friday the 13th movies that I can gift him.
That would be crazy.
That would be so sick if he can use the real ones. But it's so funny because after that interview had went out, Kanye changes the album cover and takes off the hockey mask. So
imagine you see him on the next one with the real like Jason Voorhees mask.
That'd be so dope. Because I have to admit, looking at it, I'm like, yeah, I could find this at Walmart, you know?
They should probably
looking at the mask.
But maybe there was gonna be like a possible lawsuit or you know how it goes with branding and imaging, right?
That's
or he would
true.
Have had to pay someone. So I don't know. It's kind of a fishy situation.
What's interesting though is that Kanye does seem to have a fascination with the Friday the 13th horror franchise because it might have an impact on the album's next release date. So Kanye, I'm not sure if it was Kanye or someone in his team, but there were legitimate text exchanges that showed that he might want to release Vultures 2 on the next Friday the 13th, which would be September 13th, 2024. So looking ahead at the future of this Vultures era, I want to ask you this. When do you expect to get these albums? And would you be okay with waiting as far as next fall? Well, this fall coming.
I was finishing text exchanges. I showed them. It's Friday, September 13th.
Yeah. How would you feel if...
Was that actually what he was teasing?
Yeah. How would you feel if it's not March and it's actually September as the next album date?
That's pretty cool, though.
You'd like that?
Yeah, give it some time. It's a lot more suspense, a lot more of the lore.
I agree.
I am totally fine with waiting for albums. That is like the least of my fucking worries. Like, I really don't care. I'm a patient dude. I could sit here all day and I could just talk about the music. So exactly. It doesn't necessarily bother me. And to be honest with you, like, 3 albums in 3 months, it's a lot. You don't even have time to look at the music.
I think this is the better play, low key. If this happens.
Absolutely.
I think this would be the better play.
So
wait, hold
on. But like, looking at, so the second date in March is still the 13th, right? Or is it?
No.
So what would be the next Friday the 13th then?
September 13th, 2024. That's the next Friday the 13th.
Yeah. But there's 3 more installments. So it's like, then do you have to wait September 13th for like the second one?
Yes, you might have. That's the whole point, is that Vultures 2 might be only coming out September 13th. That's the whole point. So we'll see. I would
cool
be okay with it.
Yeah, but how do you feel about it? You're fine with it?
I'm okay with it. I think that, you know, at this point, I would just like some transparency from EA being like, guys, listen, I'm not following through with these dates. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to give me an exact date of when it's dropping. Like, that's up to you and the suspense you want to build. But if you're going to announce dates, at least sort of say, yeah, I'm pushing it. You know what I mean? That's all that I would expect
from Kanye, kind of
the same way that you expect that from other artists. The last component that we want to talk about when it comes to stuff you could have missed were some references to other songs within this album. Starting off with Unback to Me, Freddie Gibbs raps, she's crying tears in that Maybach and not a Toyota. What's cool is that this was actually a callback to a line that was similar that he had on Benny the Butcher's One Way Flight, where he raps, you gonna cry in that Toyota or this Maybach, excuse me. So cool to see him sort of, you know, make a callback and a reference to an older verse. Then also another one that I picked up on was at the end of Problematic, where Ye raps, shit is fucking ridiculous. And of course, that was a reference to So Appalled from My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Another reference, of course, was that on Carnival, you had Kanye, like we mentioned earlier, sample Hell of a Life. So another My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy reference. But apart from that, were there any other references that you picked up on, maybe lyric-wise, sonically speaking?
No, I have to have more time with the album, to be honest with you. You can't necessarily get everything off of like your first like 5 or 6 listens. So you got to be able to like kind of live with the album. And I hope that's the kind of album that it is, that I'm going to be listening to it over and over again, and that I kind of pick up something new every time that I do listen to it. But that's going to conclude today's audio experience, guys. Thank you so much for coming through today. We really appreciate you. And let us know if you want to see more concepts like this, right? Kind of out of the realms of the recommendations and kind of diving deep into like album lore and talking about narratives, talking about marketing. I think it could be super cool. But much love to everyone that came in today. And if you want to leave us a 5-star review, that would be absolutely amazing. And for any new viewers here, anyone that this is your first time listening to NFR Podcast on audio exclusive platforms, we are dropping a new episode every single Tuesday. So expect one next week, expect one the week after, the week after, the week after. You get the point, guys. Much love for listening to this, and we'll catch you in the next one. Peace.